Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Coming up, our This American Moment series continues. But first, as President Trump visits Pennsylvania today in the aftermath of the synagogue shooting, interfaith leaders are standing together to reject the hate and bigotry and violence directed their way. There's a deeply disturbing commonality between Islamophobia and anti-Semitism in this country. And we've invited guests from each community to talk about how there is strength in interfaith numbers to fight it. Yusra Ghazi is with us. She's a former State Department policy advisor, currently director of policy and programs at America Indivisible. And she's with us from Washington. And Yusra, welcome. It's really good to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's great to be on the show. And also really heartbreaking that this is the circumstance under which we have to speak.
I feel it, too. And I know Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman feels it from the senior rabbi at Temple Israel. Marcia, welcome. It's good to have you in the studio.
Thank you for having us.
Rabbi Zimmerman, I know from having talked to you that your interfaith work has gone on long before this and will continue long after this. But I'd like you to articulate what it means symbolically to see faiths come together and to do it in such an immediate way after this violence in Pittsburgh.
Well, I've always been clear, anti-sense of hatred and this religious violence, that really interfaith dialogue and interfaith relationships is the antidote to religious violence. And so that's always been my message. But I have to say, 30 years of interfaith work, and day in and day out, monthly breakfasts, retreats, and you don't always know the moment you will need it. And as a community, over these days since Saturday morning, we have needed it. And oh my goodness, it has showed up. Our interfaith partners have showed up through text, personal text messages, through showing up at our events and gatherings and mourning, both on Sunday afternoon at Temple Israel and last night at Mount Zion. Standing room, unbelievable numbers of people from other faiths who have come to support us.
Yusra, I'd imagine that kind of community is also going on in D.C., where you live?
That's right. Just a couple of days ago, I gathered with members of Muslim community, LGBT community, Jewish Americans, and others at DuPont Circle, not too far from where I live, to hold space and reflect on the many ways that, as you spoke about earlier, there are linkages between the anti-Semitism that we're experiencing here, anti-Muslim bigotry, and racism of all kinds. And to have that kind of solidarity and unity expressed in such a tragic moment brought me to tears and is reminded me, just looking around the space, at the many ways that our stories and lives intersect with one another's and how important it is to recognize that we're not alone in dealing with the really ugly trend towards hate that seems to be increasing here in the United States, in my community here in Washington, D.C. And it's things that I experienced growing up in Skokie, Illinois. I'm actually from the Chicago area. Mm-hmm. Skokie is home to, historically, home to Holocaust survivor families, and I grew up living down the road from Jewish American neighbors. And it's incredibly heartbreaking, as Rabbi was saying, to think about the challenge that we're dealing with today in light of the many years of relationship building that all these communities have done, whether it's in D.C., in Skokie, in Pittsburgh, in many parts of the country.
I'm going to come back to the linkages here that you just referred to, Yusra, in the bigotry that's directed at these faiths. But I also I want to note that, as Rabbi Zimmerman said, we had standing room only in these services that we had at Temple Israel on Sunday and then last night at Mount Zion here in St. Paul. And I'd like you to listen to Nashini Hussein speaking at the service last night and really channeling what we're talking about this morning.
We as Muslim women stand not simply as allies and in solidarity, but as your sisters. Our hearts are broken as a house of the Almighty was attacked. Our house was attacked also.
I think that's really meaningful what Nashina is saying there, Rabbi, about we are not just going to stand up as your allies, but we're going to feel this on an emotional level. So what does that say to you?
I was sitting in the front row and it was so powerful to hear, you know, your elders are my elders. We all know, those of us who are in religious institutions, especially synagogues, mosques, churches, that there's always that group of people who show up early, who show up at everything and are the elders. And those are the people who were killed on Saturday morning. They were the ones that showed up always. And so for me, for her to connect that sense of these elders are our elders, we are your sisters, is truly the antidote to fear, the antidote to violence, the antidote to this crazy, crazy world where we have to stop the violence, stop the airways being filled with these horrible, hatred. These words, we have to stop it. And so the antidote is exactly what happened in those sanctuaries these past two days.
Yusra, where do you see the connection between the kind of bigotry and hate that's directed at your faith, at Muslim communities in America and at Jewish communities in America? Where do they intersect?
Well, I think a lot of the intersection comes from a sense of fear of the other. And so at America Indivisible, we are a coalition-based organization that's made up of individuals and communities that are Arab American, South Asian American, African American, Sikh American, and Muslims who recognize that Islamophobia is not just a Muslim problem. It is a problem that impacts these racialized categories of people, so anyone perceived to be Muslim. And so the kinds of bigotry and discrimination and hate aimed at these communities comes, what we've found, from a place of fear and anxiety about change in the American landscape, change in my community. What does it look like to have people who look so different from me and possibly practice and believe in things so different from me? That is a reaction that we've seen come up. It feeds into narratives that grow both anti-Semitism and Islamophobia in Europe, and we're seeing that here. So at American Invisible, one of our partner organizations is the Sisterhood of Salaam Shalom. Mm-hmm. It's a really phenomenal organization that builds sisterhood between Muslim and Jewish women. I'm actually going to be spending some time in Pennsylvania this weekend with them at their fifth annual conference, encouraging women to share stories with each other about both opportunities they've had to uplift one another, but also to build understanding. What I've found is that there are really inspiring examples like this organization, Sisterhood of Salaam Shalom, or a youth organization that I came up through growing up as a Muslim in Skokie, Illinois, called Interfaith Youth Corps, that are finding ways that people from all kind of intersecting identities can find common understanding and work together collaboratively on issues that matter to them. that's something that we see bringing really diverse groups together at this unique time and moment in U.S. history.
If you've just tuned into the show, we're having a conversation with Yusa Ghazi, Director of Policy and Programs for America Indivisible, and Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman. She's the Senior Rabbi at Temple Israel in Minneapolis. Taking note this morning of the immediate and flourishing response from interfaith communities to the violence that happened in Pittsburgh, but also having to take note that a lot of the bigotry and prejudice that is directed at Muslim communities in America is also directed at Jewish communities in America, and how they can find, and we can find, common cause to fight that. We talked a bit about the symbolism of it. We talked about the on-the-ground work of it. And Marcia, I want to read you something that that Rabbi Josh Stanton wrote about this on onbeing.org, Krista Tippett's project, about this intersection of Muslim and Jewish faith and doubt and practice and ritual. Listen to this. He says, "I remain someone who doubts and someone who questions. These doubts undergird my belief in a Jewish system of thought and practice that leads to a better life, with or without firm belief in God. But the passionate belief of progressive American Muslim colleagues warms me to the possibility of what a world could be in which there is a God, not merely one that is remote and conceptual, but one that is connective and in relationship with humanity." I mean, I hear him saying this goes beyond the let's try to find common cause in our faith to this idea of we are one human to another. And that is really what faith is, right? What the faith community is all about. What's your take on that?
Definitely. There is that oneness. And again, at Mount Zion, I am your sister, is that idea that the divisions that are trying to be imposed on us are meaningless, really, if we just hold together and find that commonality. But there's also that next step of truly hearing the other.
So what does that sound like and look like then?
I think it really is about being enriched by the multiple of narratives that are there. God is one and God is oneness and we all are oneness. But from the Tower of Babel, we learned that oneness doesn't necessarily mean peace. Oneness can be used as a bad reality as well. And so I think it's a both and. We have to say there are the unique differences of being a Jew, of being a Muslim, of being a Christian, of being a Buddhist. And we are enriched by those many different narratives. So it's not this desire to make everybody the same.
Right.
Because that doesn't work. We know that doesn't work. The melting pot doesn't work. The powerful become truly the major ingredient. And so everybody has to sit under that universalism and forget about their uniqueness. That is not the answer. The answer is a both and.
I was just thinking, as Marcia was saying that, Yusra, that there is a, for lack of a better term, a competitiveness sometimes among faiths. Well, if I know the true way, I can't give total respect to your faith because your faith says something different about the true way. I hear Marcia saying there is a way to live with that and live in that and not feel that weird sense of it's mine or and not yours. I'd love to hear how you think about that.
Yes, absolutely. I think this value is embedded in particular in Islamic faith. So I don't know if either of you caught this, but in response to this tragedy, a couple Muslim organizations came together and put together a crowdfunded campaign.
Yes, I did see that.
They were trying to raise $25,000. I think at last check it was over $180,000 that they raised in collaboration with other faith communities. And now they are trying to raise funds to help support the families of the victims in the Kentucky shooting at the Kroger earlier in the week. The shooter in that case tried to get into a church before ending up at the market and taking those victims. And so in that campaign is included a very inspiring hadith or saying, an example from the life of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. It's an example of when he stood up to pay respect for a passing Jewish funeral procession. And when someone asked him why he was standing up for a Jewish funeral, he said, is it not a human soul? Growing up as a Muslim person, again, in Skokie, Illinois, I was taught to value any life and the loss of any life as the loss of all mankind. And so that these values are deeply embedded in Islamic teachings. And it's one of the reasons why you will see Muslim Americans putting their dollars and standing in shoulder to shoulder with Jewish Americans at this time of conflict and crisis, as well as the work that they do to stand in solidarity with African American communities, with LGBT communities. These communities are within Muslim communities and they're outside of Muslim communities.
Mm-hmm. Marcia, do you fear that more and more of our political life is apart from the values that inform religious lives or what we might think of as our spiritual tenets, that we are seeing more and more of a gap between the two?
I think we are unfortunately becoming like many other nations in the world. And that is that we've been so proud. I've been so proud as an American to say that we have a transfer of power peacefully. And it feels like that time is ending, that we are regressing to violence leading up to elections, violence stopping people from voting. And so the idea that we all have one vote and we all have the ability to make the choices of who represents us, if that becomes too separate, then all morals and ethics become separate.
Yeah, Yusra, I think of that as not as this is a country that must be fill in the blank of the faith, more as that do we still want to believe that our highest ideals, faith-driven, humanist-driven, inform the way we think of our political process? Idealistically, I think we want to believe that, but boy, I the evidence of it is in shorter and shorter supply. And I know you've been involved in politics. I wonder how you see that.
You know, one of the things that most excited me about, there's a book that came out, I think Denise Spellberg is the author, is called Thomas Jefferson's Quran. When I first learned that Thomas Jefferson owned a Quran, as a Muslim American who grew up just sort of internalizing the idea that America is a Christian country, it blew my mind. Just to think about the fact that folks who were charged with building the framework for governance for this nation thought in their minds at that time that we want to set up a system of government in which somehow in the future, if there ever were Muslim people in this country, that they would have the right to religious liberty and the right to believe what they want to believe and have a place in this country. And so they did right with, and I think Thomas Jefferson thought with a bit of idealism about religious diversity. I think the really cruel part of this whole story is that, the founding fathers probably didn't realize that a number of slaves that were forcibly brought into this country were also Muslim, and that there was remarkable religious diversity at this time, especially among indigenous communities that were already here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that in the work that we do, either at American Invisible, I'm also a senior fellow at the Religious Freedom Center here in D.C., we have to take both of those narratives hand in hand, the promise of democracy and liberty, all the rights embedded in our First Amendment are ideals that we weren't even living up to when this nation was founded. And it is an ideal that I think many organizations and many individuals in this country want to continue to strive for, because there is a promise embedded in that, an unfulfilled promise, but one that we can be hopeful and proactive about trying to implement. And so When I worked at the State Department and went to different countries and spoke with communities from all over about, some of the really amazing aspects of living in this kind of a democratic country, I didn't necessarily shy away from admitting the ugly sides of what we have to deal with when it comes to race relations, when it comes to discrimination, bigotry. We can't be naive about the work that we do, but that doesn't mean we can't also be hopeful.
Usra, thank you. So encouraging and meaningful to talk to you this morning. Thank you.
It's great talking to you both. Thank you so much.
Usra Ghazi from America Indivisible. Marsha, always a pleasure to see you, especially in the studio. Thank you. Marsha Zimmerman, Senior Rabbi at Temple Israel in Minneapolis. We'll get a look at the latest news and then on to This American Moment.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.